but our personal loss must be balanced against the needs of the rebellion. The tears were coming unbidden, and Bria was powerless against them. Our personal loss. She leaned into her husband, shrugging deep into his embrace, hiding the twitch in her chin that signaled her moment of steely political resolve was crumbling. Not loss, she said. Not yet. I won't give up. But Bale, we should never have agreed to this, to let her go. He rested his chin heavily on her head, and Bria felt suddenly ancient and afraid, frail, battered on all sides by a war she could not stop, and evil she could not understand. This war is just beginning, and we must make what preparations we can here. Even if we do nothing but look for her, even if we do nothing but hope, the war is here, he said softly. It will be fought by Leia when we find her. We could try to keep her hidden and safe here on Alderaan if, when, she's recovered, but we both know she would find a way to leave. Yes, I know. She pulled away, scrubbing her eyes with both hands. We should be out there looking too. Captain Andoram can prepare a transport for us. We should raise him. I'm sorry, he said. You know as well as I do that it's simply too dangerous. If the Tantivy can be taken out, then so can we. Bria shook her head and hugged herself, rubbing warmth into her already warm arms. Her anger subsided into sadness, and she returned to her husband, letting him fold her into a tight embrace as the last comforting touch of the sun fell on their faces. Of course that's true. But I can't do nothing, love. I refuse to do nothing. She pulled a small hollow device from the pockets of her voluminous skirts, finding that even that simple task required full focus. Even standing and breathing felt like unfairly cruel tasks. But she steeled herself, prepared to be a queen for a moment longer, and a mother the moment the call went through. The blue image of Captain Andoram flickered to life on the hollow as he accepted the transmission. Perhaps we must indeed stay here, Bria said quietly. But we have able pilots and agents, and they will search where we cannot. Knowing there would be no sleep did not make its absence any easier. A constant tremor began in her hands, one Bria felt echoed in her brain. There was no word of her daughter yet, not in the direction of life or death, and the possibility that they would never really discover Leia's fate was becoming likelier by the day. That possibility hung over her like a blind spot, and at certain moments, exhausted to the point of delusion, she swore an actual black void was beginning to obscure her vision permanently. Every blip on every communication device sent her into another paroxysm of expectant fear. She let nobody but Bale see it, or at least she did her best to hide the weariness darkening under her eyes and the shaking of her hands. 2 days. 2 days had passed since her husband's return, and it felt like a lifetime. The lack of sleep blurring the hours together until she could no more rest than divine the hour or day. The long, vaulted chamber at the north end of the palace had once hosted dignitaries and been the place of somber, serious political discussion. But now it had become the hub of information, while their best-trained agents searched quietly for Leia. Bria spent too much time there. She ate there when she could stomach it, and she watched Bale from across the vastness of the meeting table, their eyes ricocheting off each other's. Any lingering glance, and Bria would feel herself hurtling toward tears. There would be no tears in front of their generals. She saw a page cross from the high arch door to the table and stand at Bale's elbow. Their whispered exchange was lost over the constant chatter of the men and women around them and the steady stream of incoming and outgoing holo calls. But Bria observed closely, every new piece of information bringing a surge of hope. Leads, most of them empty, seemed to circle endlessly back to the same conclusion. The Tantivy had been annihilated, and with it, every soul on board. Bale shook his head, and she noticed the same telling tremor in his hands as he pinched the bridge of his nose in frustration.
"Someone must know something. Do you hear me? Go back," he said, his voice rising in irritation. "Go back and check again, and then check once more."
The page swept the blue cap off his head and bowed his way out of the hall, stricken, his sweet young face turning bright crimson. Bria joined her husband, finding his hand under the table and taking it. He did not look at her, but he leaned almost imperceptibly into her shoulder.
"They are worried too, Bale. Don't forget that." "I shouldn't have snapped at him."
She had only tired smiles left in her, so she gave him one. "He will forgive you."
"Oh, your majesties!"
WA2V wheeled into the chaos of the room, deftly weaving through the concerned crowd to where Bale and Bria stood. Her slender arms were laden with a gown, one Bria recognized at once as her own. It had been changed slightly, the length taken up for Leia's petite size, a glittering spray of gems added to the hem. The droid stopped just short of them, and Bria had to put out a hand to keep the dress from tumbling out of Tuvi's grasp. Her fingers brushed the familiar silk, and a new wave of grief crested.
"You were right. It was a much better idea to freshen up one of your old gowns,"
the droid said, fussing with the sleeves of the dress.
"This one is just so special. It would be a shame to leave it in storage. It will suit the princess just perfectly."
"This is not the time," Bale interrupted, turning toward the attendant. "There are other considerations worthy of our attention."
But the droid continued to look to Bria, holding out the empty gown. The queen forced herself to put her hand on the rich fabric, numbing herself to the fresh pain.
"It's lovely," she assured the attendant.
"When Leia returns, she will be very pleased." Tuvi wheeled back and forth, fidgeting, then replied with a chirp.
"I think so too, Majesty. And she will be home soon to see it."
A blue man shimmered to life to their left, an incoming holo from Captain Andoram, making him glow in miniature as he shouted frantically from his offices in the spaceport.
"What now?"
Bale stalked toward the end of the long table, wedging himself between two ministers huddling over the holo. Bria was there an instant later, leaning forward to speak clearly into the recording device.
"Andoram? Can you hear me? Is there news?" "Above!"
The captain sounded panicked.
"Can you see? Something is moving into position in orbit. We had no warning."
"What are you saying? You aren't making any sense," Bria replied, watching the call begin to fail. Something was interfering with the transmission.
"Captain!"
But Bale grabbed her by the wrist, turning to her slowly, his eyes searching the floor between them.
"Come,"
he whispered.
"Outside. Transfer the captain to my personal line."
She let him lead her out of the hall and down the corridor at a run, and Bria picked up her skirts to keep pace, breath catching in her throat as he brought them sprinting through the palace and to the nearest balcony, the familiar outdoor haven off their chambers. They both skidded to a stop, Andoram springing to life in Bale's hand as they stared up at the darkened sky.
"Get safety!"
The captain's voice was just a crackle now.
"Think, Bale. The Tantive goes down. Are communications blocked?"
She sighed and watched as the image of the captain cut out entirely.
"They must know it was Leia. This is a retaliation."
Her husband began to pace, sweat beating at his temples as he threw down the comm in frustration. Most of what he muttered to himself was too soft to be heard.
"Impossible. They wouldn't dare."
Maybe this was all a distraction, some Imperial plot to keep them from searching for their daughter. Nothing was certain, she reminded herself. Nothing was to be believed until they had absolute confirmation. And if the Empire's attention had turned to Alderaan, then all the better. Let them be distracted here. It might allow her daughter to escape the wreck. As long as she survived, there was hope. No matter what far-flung planet Leia landed on, she would find a way to deliver the data and complete her task. A shadow fell across the balcony, draping them both in cold and sudden darkness. She reached for Bale instinctively, looping her arm in his as they both turned in unison to face the valley. Bria shielded her eyes with the flat of her hand, gazing up at the sky and the massive object that moved slowly across the sun. In an instant, the thing had obscured the sun completely. "What could be so large?" Bria murmured. Fear knotted tightly in her stomach as she clung harder to her husband. What was she seeing? She had witnessed an eclipse once on Coruscant, but this was so much faster, so unnatural. Beside her, Bale gasped and then seemed to go limp. He turned to her, eyes empty, mouth moving but silent. At last he found his voice and searched the ground at her feet.
"The planet killer."
She fought back the surge of nausea that slammed into her like a breaking wave and placed her hands on his face, forcing Bale to look at her. It couldn't be true. Not Alderaan. They were in the heart of the galaxy, a major planet, a bastion of tradition and peace and prosperity. The perfect symbol to destroy. The perfect message to send. No planet was too sacred, too populous. No planet was safe. "My love." "They wouldn't," she said, even as she knew they would. Bale smoothed his hands over hers and touched their foreheads together.
"At least we will be together."
"No!" She refused to believe it. How could such evil exist? There must be time. The spaceport is too far, but we could reach our private shuttle. We could evacuate as many as possible. There must be something, anything that we can..." The sound was incredible. They turned toward it in awe and dread, a deadening of air that pulled all noise from around them before a tremendous blast like lightning rent the air. Bale yanked her into his arms, squeezing her as light blinded them, a ring of white that grew from the horizon, spreading fast, bringing trees, beasts, and rocks with it. "She made it out," Bria whispered, trembling hands balled in his cloak, her disbelieving eyes watching as the planet itself burst with 1,000 bright, terrible geysers. "I would know if she was gone, Bale." "She lives." He kissed her forehead, leaving his lips there as the palace shook under them and the beams holding the balcony aloft screamed and gave. The attendants inside their apartments gave a wail of fright, and the castle sagged with no ground left beneath it. Her bones hurt. It felt like they were being shaken apart.
"She lives," Bale said once more.
Bria closed her eyes. "I know." The mountains rose up, folding toward them, swallowing them whole. She felt her husband's warmth, his breath on her neck, then the scent of ash and smoke, and in the next moment, oblivion.
Verge of Greatness by Pablo Hidalgo. Ven. You may fire when ready. Willough Tarkin was not the type to have rehearsed words. He was not given to standing before a mirror and imagining his moments of triumph, mouthing or whispering statements that would become cemented in history. But these words were different. He had waited over 2 decades to say them. These words would begin an unfathomable frenzy of actions and reactions deep within the enormous weapon he stood in control of, and unleash a torrent of primordial fire that would erase the enemies of the Empire in a searing instant. It pricked him that Director Krennic had already given the order to fire a test shot that had vaporized Jedha City. But such precautions were necessary. What if it had failed? Better such embarrassment lie at the feet of Orson Krennic than Grand Moff Tarkin. Krennic's test proved spectacular, but the good director was destined to receive only a footnote mention in the annals of the Empire, as being tangentially connected to a mining disaster on the ancient moon. Tarkin had carefully modulated his own distance from the project over the years, hovering ever closer when signs pointed to success, floating farther away when delays gnawed at the Emperor's patience. In that moment over Jeddah, the Death Star had moved from concept to proof, and Tarkin had stepped from distant backer to chief architect. Krennic had tried to steal that moment. What was it he had said? That they stood there amid his achievement? Nonsense. Such claims were as absurd as a bricklayer taking pride in a parapet built at the behest of a king. It is a king's castle. Glory ascends ever skyward. Now Tarkin stood atop the sky, looking down at Scarif, a world violated by rebel intruders. A world infested, its secrets, imperial secrets, exposed to rebel vermin. These secrets were not irreplaceable. There were duplicates of the military development records on Coruscant, and knowing the Emperor, elsewhere. That was beside the point. The rebel threat was here and now. The matter called for an executive decision. The rebels could not leave Scarif. The information needed to be purged as a limb needed to be amputated before the infection spread elsewhere. And Krennic was down there, wasn't he? Returned to the Citadel on Scarif to clean up the mess he started. Well, Tarkin could do him a favor and sterilize that mess far more effectively from his current vantage point, inside the Death Star, orbiting high above the tropical planet. Scarif turned below, bringing the Citadel to the horizon. "You may fire when ready," Tarkin said at long last, and he allowed himself the briefest of smiles. Now, Tarkin stood on the overbridge of the Death Star, surrounded by luminescent instrumentation and humming machinery. General Tag waited nearby, as did Admiral Motti, examining a readout display, though a glance that failed to notice these officers could be forgiven. What with the other presence on the floor? The imposing form of Darth Vader, Dark Lord of the Sith.
Our resistance to the mind probe is considerable. It will be some time before we can extract any information from her,
rumbled Vader, describing the tenacity of their prisoner, Princess Leia Organa of Alderaan. Time. The word echoed in Tarkin's mind, bringing up thoughts of the past again. You have made Time an ally of the Rebellion. Tarkin had scolded that idiot Krennic over such matters. The final checkout is completed, Motti beamed. The Admiral took care to ensure that Tarkin stood directly between him and the capricious Dark Lord. Motti and Vader had had a recent disagreement on matters of spirituality and procedure. All systems are operational. What course shall we set? An operational Death Star and the entire galaxy within reach. A moment 2 decades in the making. And yet, Tarkin could not savor it. The questions buzzed at him like a gnat in a bedroom. Where were these rebels? Where were they operating from? Where was their base? And the most stinging question, what good was having the most powerful weapon in the universe if this girl could defy them? Perhaps she would respond to an alternative form of persuasion, he proposed. The Senate and its appeals to the populace were no more. The Emperor had seen to that with the long overdue dissolution of that quarrelsome body. Planets that brooked treason but were afforded some protection by invoking the sympathies of the Empire's citizens would have no voice to appeal to the people. These worlds needed a reminder of what ultimate power looked like.
What do you mean?
Asked Vader, though no doubt the Dark Lord already suspected the eventual destination of Tarkin's train of thought. I think it is time we demonstrated the full power of this station, said Tarkin. He turned to the young admiral. Set your course for Alderaan. Marty grinned. With pleasure. The Death Star's jump to hyperspace occurred with little incident. It was literally no small matter to propel such a massive object to superluminal velocities. But the marvel of engineering that was this battle station performed to expectation. Only slight shudders could be felt in Tarkin's spacious office, where they resonated in rings in a cup of water on the gleaming surface of his desk. Tarkin sat looking over engineering reports scrolling across his desk monitor. Per Krennic standards, each hyperspace jump was accompanied by an exhaustive list chronicling the performance of every system and subsystem involved in the process. Tarkin's bony fingers flicked a scroll of information, but he soon grew disinterested. The station worked. He didn't need an autopsy on every mechanical event. Let the engineers pour through it. He shuffled this technical data feed out of view and pulled up the news coming out of the capital. The disbanding of the Senate demanded the attention of the media, and the holonews outlets were obediently repeating the narrative that the Empire's advisors had prepared. Rebel traitors had infiltrated the Senate. Such infiltration resulted in a devastating terrorist attack on a major Imperial military installation on Scarif. For the duration of the emergency, the Emperor needed absolute control to bring a swift end to this threat and root out insurgents who had access to the heart of the Imperial bureaucracy. Tarkin saw a dramatic display of the Death Star's prime weapon as the perfect way to punctuate that decree with an undeniable example of Imperial power. Tarkin had the authority to make such decisions. Surely he need not seek permission from Coruscant to do what he planned. The door chime rang, interrupting Tarkin's reading. From his desk, he unsealed the door and invited his visitor to enter. Marty stepped forward. "I wish to congratulate you, Governor, on a more personal level than formality would ordinarily allow. You have achieved what many non-believers deemed would be impossible," he said. Marty's nostrils flared as he breathed deeply. "The Death Star is ready and is yours." "Your sentiment is noted and appreciated, Marty. But I'm not one to have time wasted on overly emotional displays," said Tarkin, watching the Admiral closely. "You did not come here just to share such words." Marty swallowed, then spoke.
"Sir, if I may.
This station can destroy any planet you care to select. The entire Starfleet in pitched battle couldn't stop us.
Couldn't stop you.
You now have in your hand the power of life and death over every living thing in the galaxy." Tarkin waited, saying nothing. Marty continued.
"Ultimate power. It rests with you now."
"And with the Emperor, of course," said Tarkin, spearing Marty with his gaze.
"To be sure, Governor,"
Marty quickly replied.
"That's what I meant. But the Emperor is far from here, and you are in actual command."
Tarkin reached for his water, but still watched Marty closely. "This isn't the first time you've spoken in this fashion, Marty." He took a brief sip. "Say what is on your mind."
"If you order so."
Marty's pause was almost imperceptible.
"The battle station has become the very source of the Empire's power. All that power lies at your command. And your command alone."
"You are close to treason, Marty," Tarkin warned. He had known that the conversation would arrive at this mark when Marty had shown himself in. "Is it treason to point out that you can demand a position of authority second only to that of the Emperor?" asked Marty.
"I would not care to have the Emperor as my enemy," Tarkin said, breaking eye contact with Marty to glance down at the reports from Coruscant. With a flick of a button, he collapsed that data feed.
"But command of the Death Star makes you his equal," said Marty. "You could share dominion of the galaxy."
The slight emphasis on share painted a clear picture of motivation in Tarkin's mind. He looked back up at Marty and grinned his lipless grin. With you at my right hand? I'm your willing servant, Governor Tarkin. Tarkin stood. Marty took an expectant half-step forward, but Tarkin stayed behind his desk. Thank you for the sentiment regarding the station's operation, Admiral. But we shall now return to the formality of procedure and record, and continue our mission that the Emperor has decreed. Marty nodded, regaining his more rigid posture and the degree of circumspection that Imperial protocols dictated. But the gleam was still in his eye. It had been a gamble, but Marty had successfully launched the first volley in an ambitious bid for power, and still stood possessed of his rank and his life. Tarkin dismissed him with a nod, and Marty turned on his heels and stepped out of the office. Politics, thought Tarkin, was where Krennic failed. The loud-mouthed engineer knew the intricacies of hyperdrives and energy conversion ratios, but he had failed to see the pitfalls of the Imperial Court. Krennic had wanted to ascend, but was at a loss as to how to climb. Tarkin had blocked his every path, and not even a Death Star had allowed Krennic to rise. Krennic had been a builder pretending to be a leader. In the end, it was his undoing. Tarkin stood on the overbridge. Admiral Marty had informed him of the safe reversion from hyperspace, and that the Death Star now loomed closer to Alderaan. Tarkin had visited the world on many occasions. It was steeped in history, its royal family having launched many of the ancient expeditions that had first opened up the galaxy. Such a pedigree elevated it to untouchable heights of import, and a cloud of arrogance surrounded it. The Organas had thought they could act with impunity in defying the Emperor's decrees, because history had afforded them a special place in the hearts and minds of the people. Alderaan and its royals were overdue for a lesson. "Governor Tarkin," said a haughty voice, cloaked in an affected accent. "I should have expected to find you holding Vader's leash. I recognized your foul stench when I was brought on board." Despite her small frame, entirely overshadowed by the oppressive black form of Darth Vader, Princess Leia Organa stood straight and proud. She was a fraction of Tarkin's height and age, but she stood her ground well as they exchanged barbs dressed as pleasantries. But Tarkin soon grew weary of the interchange. "Princess Leia," he said, "before your execution, I would like you to be my guest at a ceremony that will make this battle station operational." Tarkin spread his arms, taking in the sweep of the Death Star. "No star system will dare oppose the Emperor now." Leia faced him and spoke evenly. "The more you tighten your grip, Tarkin, the more star systems will slip through your fingers. Not after we demonstrate the power of this station. In a way, you have determined the choice of the planet that will be destroyed first," Tarkin said. He turned to the overbridge monitor that displayed the image of blue-green Alderaan. So very much like Scarif, when he last stood in control of the Death Star's prime weapon. Except now, there would be no half-measures in the battle station's operation. "Since you are reluctant to provide us with the location of the Rebel base, I have chosen to test this station's destructive power on your home planet of Alderaan," he said. Leia gasped. There it was. The crack in the facade. The crumbling of hope. The death of that rebellious spark. Leia pleaded. Tarkin savored it. Vader was as impassive and unreadable as ever. It was different this time, the blast that emanated from the battle station superlaser. The 8 tributary beams funneled into a single ray that reduced Alderaan into fiery rubble. Tens of thousands of years of history were wiped out in an instant. Tarkin saw his future in the bright shock wave of fire that radiated into the cosmos.
He thought of the distant Emperor and how little Palpatine's reaction would matter. He thought of the girl, sobbing at the destruction of her treasonous world. He thought of Morty's words. And in this moment of triumph, Tarkin couldn't help but think of Krennic and all he had taken from the unworthy man. Then, his shoulder burned, charred flesh cracked with every move. Orson Krennic's consciousness swam up from pain-induced darkness. His senses focused the blurry sunlight into a comprehensible image. He was on Scarif, in the grip of what could only be described as a nightmare. But it was no dream. It was all true, and it just gotten worse. Krennic looked skyward and saw his creation, the Death Star, looming beyond the clouds, revolving slowly. Tarkin! Krennic fumed. Tarkin was now in control of his battle station, or so Tarkin thought. You do not know the power you stand upon, Tarkin. You don't know how to tame this. If the rebels had succeeded in stealing the technical readouts of the battle station, then Krennic's immediate course of action would have been to order a complete review of the schematics. Now aware of Galen Erso's treachery, Krennic would have combed through the data to find anything, any aberration, no matter how insignificant. He would plug any gap that Erso might have made in the Death Star's armor. Krennic would do so, even though some would scoff that the Death Star was a proven success. Krennic would pull the station offline to examine every bolt. Krennic would have weathered the political fallout of depriving the Emperor of his new weapon to ensure it worked flawlessly. Because Krennic was an engineer, Tarkin was not. Tarkin could not fathom the complexity of this creation. Tarkin would instead be consumed by impatience. Tarkin was a politician pretending to be an architect. In the end, Krennic knew it would be his undoing. My creation will be your destruction. And with a flash of green energy, funneled through an array of composite kyber crystals engineered by Galen Erso, whose daughter just moments ago he had caught trespassing in the very heart of Imperial secrets, Orson Krennic became dust.
The Trigger by Kieran Gillen. Maybe Aphra didn't look like a rebel. Maybe she wasn't going to get shot. As she tumbled through the undergrowth, the vicious Dantooine thorns tearing at her, she realized that all she had were her prejudices of what rebels actually looked like. She pictured them having jutting chins, chests swollen with pride, and heads slightly creaking with a surfeit of misplaced idealism. That wasn't Aphra. That said, with dual blasters at the hip, goggles perched on her tatty pilot's helmet and a wiry build, she looked more like a successful scavenger or an unsuccessful criminal than a doctor of archaeology. It'd be best to keep her head down, get back to the Archangel, and get the hell off this dumb green planet before she crossed paths with one of the Imperial patrols. It didn't matter what she looked like. If they found her near this rebel base, they'd be suspicious. Inevitably in that murderously suspicious way the Empire was so fond of. Aphra's life alternated between finding interesting ancient artifacts and reactivating interesting ancient artifacts, with brief interstitial periods of selling the interesting ancient artifacts. She liked to describe herself as a rogue archaeologist. Others tended to describe her as a weapons dealer. After spending the best years of her 20s doing so, she couldn't in good faith argue that hard against that. She had been holed up in Dantoo Town trying to reactivate and upgrade some war surplus droidekas. Having the deflection fields integrate with the newly added rocket pods was nightmarish. Her first experiment led to the payload detonating on the inside of the field. Cue Aphra spending 2 weeks rebuilding the droids from scratch. She could solve the problem easily enough if she had a 3.23 colicoidic pulse field modulator. None of her usual contacts had one, so she looked for salvage. She thought she had a lead. This base on the far side of Dantooine had been secret enough not to draw attention to itself, but big enough that it couldn't be hidden from anyone actually looking. Aphra hacked into an orbital station's feeds, which let her track the regular, secretive movement of snub fighters into orbit and back. She presumed it was criminals, or criminals with delusions of altruism, as in rebels. But it had been quiet for a while now. Probably abandoned. Possibly salvage-rich. The base itself was elegantly integrated with Dantooine's endless tree canopy. From orbit, you'd likely think it was a larger example of one of the planet's many sap farms. It'd take an expert eye to notice the snub fighter bays in a circle around a low main bunker. In her time picking over the scrawl, Aphra had learned a couple of things. Firstly, it was definitely a rebel base. Secondly, rebels were worryingly efficient in cleaning up after themselves. She felt sure actual criminals would have left more of a useful mess. Curse the rebellion. Aphra had complicated feelings toward the rebellion. Their instincts were good, but good wasn't good enough. People like the rebels, all big-hearted and high-minded, led to the Galactic Civil War. As far as Aphra had an ethical orientation, it had been formed by growing up in the shadow of the war. Most people needed order. Better the Empire when the alternative was that. Weak people died in their billions in that alternative. Not that Aphra needed anyone, of course. She was working her way through what she was pretty sure was the central comm before it had been stripped, when the Archangel sent her an alert. A flyby of TIE fighters had triggered her alerts. She had just enough time to run from the compound and throw herself into the wild undergrowth. Then the drop pods crashed down, gleaming stormtrooper kill teams spreading across the base like insects. Aphra decided she didn't really need the 3.23 colicoidic pulse field modulator that badly, and ran back to her ship through a purgatory of thorns, viscous sap, and all-permeating forest damp. She almost burst through the undergrowth into the open when she saw the camouflaged curve of her pocket cruiser's unusually towering curved nose peeking beneath the hollow webbing she'd left to conceal it. Aphra had made it to safety. A second later, she realized she hadn't. Working their way unknowingly toward the Archangel were three stormtroopers making a perimeter sweep. It was an obvious problem for her. It was also a problem for them, in that they were about to hit the layer of micromines she'd left to cover the approach. A moral dilemma. Or, as Aphra preferred to think of them, dilemmas. Moral never really came into it. Option one. She lets them hit the mines. She finishes anyone left with her blasters. She gets the Archangel into orbit, trying to dodge the inevitable Star Destroyer that brought all these troopers here. She almost certainly has to abandon the droidica hulls she's left in Dantoo Town and has to burn through another transponder identity on the Archangel. Oh, and she murders a bunch of people, too. Alternatively, Aphra sighed, holstered her blaster, and stepped forward, hands raised, smile wide. "Hey, guys," she shouted. "How can I help you, fine gentlemen of the Imperial Army?" Plus, those mines were expensive. She wasn't going to waste them on stormtroopers. The stormtroopers questioned her, searched her, and escorted, come dragged her toward the compound. They found both blasters and the knife, but they'd left her with her tools, which was probably a mistake. If they'd scanned her, they'd have found the explosive putty in the lining of her hat, stored safely in two inert packages. If she could work out an excuse to remove her hat and play with the putty for the better part of a minute, that'd be useful. Maybe she could offer to show them clay animals? She was pushed into what was once the Rebels' HQ and was now the Imperials. Support staff milled around, but Aphra knew they were irrelevant. The only man who mattered in the room stood, dressed in an Imperial uniform, looking at the holomaps of the area with a displeased expression. Aphra didn't read too much into that. Aphra suspected that, good news or bad, that expression would sit there, glowering, perpetually disappointed. He was a gray cloud in a gray uniform. He was a general. Afra couldn't interpret the string of colored buttons on his lapel, but he fulfilled every prejudice Afra had of Imperial High Command. She felt the gun still in the small of her back as the stormtrooper reported.
"Found her skulking around the outer perimeter, General Tag," said the stormtrooper in a surprisingly thin voice. "She says she's from Dantu Town. Her speeder bike is hidden east of the base. We're trying to locate it."
The speeder didn't exist, but Afra was damned if she was going to let anyone go poking around the Archangel. Afra beamed, both to try to make a good first impression and because she'd correctly identified this Tag as a general. Her knowledge of military ranks at any time past the Republic was foggy at best.
I surrendered and handed over my weapons. I just want to help," she said with all the sincerity she could muster.
Tag looked her over. He grunted, unconvinced, and turned back to the map.
"Why are you here?"
"I'm stealing stuff. Well, salvaging, but I think I should get bonus marks for honesty, right?" Afra said. "The base cleared out months ago, so I figured if there was anything left here, it was mine."
Tag glanced back, analyzing her as if she were a spreadsheet, and he wanted to check if the columns tallied or not.
"I find you in the middle of an abandoned rebel base, and you claim you know nothing," he said.
Afra gave her best attempt at an innocent gasp. It perhaps reached the level of faux innocent.
"Surely not rebels," she said. "The rebels are small and disorganized, barely more than bandits. This place could have held dozens of spaceships. Surely the rebels couldn't support a base like this."
Tag's face was as motionless as the stormtroopers' masks.
"I think you are mistaking being clever for being smart," said Tag.
Afra winced a little. Getting shot for that would be dumb even for her.
"I'm sorry. No one had any idea this was a rebel base. It had been abandoned for months by the time I got here, and..."
She paused, searching for an angle that would allow her to continue her blessed, non-blaster wounded life.
"This is the biggest military force Dantooine has ever seen. Dantooine is quiet. Indoor lighting is a novelty. A show of force like this, and everyone from around here will know that no one could dream of resisting the Empire."
Tag snorted, a single sharp noise. A laugh, or Tag's equivalent.
"I do not think there is any danger of the Empire's seriousness being underestimated," he said. "Today, scavenger, the Empire destroyed Alderaan."
The room was silent. Tag let the fact hang in the air, expecting silence to rule. It was immediately overthrown.
"How?" said Afra. "Surface bombing? Even with a fleet of Star Destroyers, that'd take weeks. Or a bioplague like on Genosha. Is this Tarkin Initiative technology? I've loved the work I've seen coming from the labs. Is it like a city's flattened thing or a leave the building standing thing? Are we talking about just sentience or a full flora-fauna extinction event? Seriously, how?"
"Atmosphere ignition? I've seen plans for that. Ooh, mantle fissure. Magma core exposure can make a mess out of a civilization. Or, oh, I'm torturing myself. What do you mean exactly?"
Tag stared at her.
"I mean the planet is dust," he said.
Afra was faintly aware that this was not the response Tag was expecting, but her excitement had its own momentum.
"Like dust dust? Like bits of asteroid and people floating in space? That?"
"The Death Star destroyed Alderaan," said Tag, somehow being dragged along in the wake of Afra's enthusiasm.
"Wow," said Afra. "That's amazing."
She was aware that she was being stared at.
"Well done, Empire," Afra said.
The awkward silence was broken when the other stormtroopers entered the room, saluting.
"Sir," said the first, "we've looked for her speeder and can't find it."
"Of course," said Afra. "I hid it. That's what hidden means."
The silence returned. Afra's Afra routine had gone down better.
Tag walked slowly up to her, arms behind his back, and considered her. Once more, Afra's spreadsheet was tallied as Tag made his final analysis.
"I don't think you're a rebel," he said.
Afra tried not to laugh. She was going to live.
"I do think you're trouble," he said. "And I suspect the world would be better off without you."
Oh, no. She wasn't going to live. She was going to do the opposite of that. When Tag ordered the trooper to take her to the trees, execute her, and return to the search, Afra had to fight every urge in her body not to run and kick and lash out. Her head screamed, her face twisted. If she ran now, she would be shot. If she fought, she'd be dragged out by a mob. Instead, she complied, and the stormtrooper guided her. Every step she looked for her opening. There had to be something. Her luck got her into this kind of situation. Her luck got her out of it. That was how it worked. A voice inside her added a taunting, "That's how it works until it doesn't." She winced. She knew it would eventually be it. Maybe this would be it. "So, is this the first time you've executed someone?" she asked, voice breaking.
"Don't speak, prisoner," said the trooper.
His voice was unsteady, too. Okay. Afra could work with that. Afra laughed nervously, glancing slowly over her shoulder and winked.
"Or what are you going to do? Shoot me?"
They carried on toward the tree line, Afra a model of compliance. "Were you aboard the Death Star?" she asked. After a pause, he replied,
"You are very interested in planetary destruction."
Who wouldn't be?" she said, stepping over a log while considering whether she could make a break for the cover of the next trunk. No, she couldn't. Not unless she wanted to do it with a 5-centimeter hole in her back.
"It's a weapon like that and you're excited by it?"
"It just makes you think. How do you even design something like that?" she said, before glancing back to check the distance. Could she rush him? Unlikely going on no. Even if she did, he had about 0.5 meters on her.
"I mean, do you think the Death Star had a trigger?" she said. "Someone ordered it to be fired, but that's easy. Did someone actually have to pull the trigger?"
She carried on into the wood. He followed, the 2 deadly steps behind her.
"I'll bet there wasn't. I bet it's a bunch of people, so everyone can have some deniability of responsibility. 6 engineers all charging up firing chambers, and it's only when they're all powered up the weapon engages. That's how I'd do it. Because if someone has the weight of knowing they killed a whole planet on them, that could break them. They could just not press the button. That's how they do firing squads on some worlds," she went on, glancing back. "There's someone whose gun isn't firing for real, so they can always think, hey, maybe I didn't do it. It's those little illusions that get us through. It's hardest when you've got no way to self-deceive." "You're doing this solo. You're as unlucky as I am," she continued. "Well, nearly as unlucky." Afra turned around and stopped. "You ever shot anyone in cold blood?"
"Turn around."
"Hey, I'm trying to help. I want to make this easy for you. This is going to sit inside you forever, and if I'm going to die, I want to really think about this. Imagine actually killing Alderaan. Alderaan, of all places! Alderaan is nice. Who'd blow up Alderaan? Hell of a place. Incredible history. Good party town. Hell, even had great sunsets. Now it doesn't even have a sky."
Afra took a slow step toward him, holding his gaze. "And you're here, with a gun pointing at some chatty lady, and you're always going to remember this day." And 0.5 step, pulling the tool from her waistband, trying to remember the code she needed.
"People are going to ask us all where we were today. Where were you when Alderaan died? And you're going to say, that's the day I went for a walk into some beautiful woods on Dantooine and shot that weird, innocent scavenger lady."
Afra almost dropped the tool and tried not to twist her face in anger.
Don't mess up now, Aphra.
If you're feeling philosophical, you'll say something like... She smiles. All innocents died that day, and people will nod and know that just because you did this really bad thing, it doesn't make you a bad person.
Aphra reached out with her hand, activating the tool. Lights on, but silent. Her hand touched his, holding that eye contact, knowing if he looked down and saw her tool near his blaster, it would all be over.
It's okay, she said. I forgive you.
He pulled the trigger. A click. Aphra's knee went toward a not nearly armored enough groin. As he reeled, she pulled the blaster from his hand. You can always induce a jam with the Imperial model blasters if you've got the right frequency, which I do. She pointed his own gun at him. Reboots after a couple of seconds. There was a low hum as the gun reactivated.
You've never shot someone in cold blood,
she said, gesturing the barrel at him.
Guess who has?
The stormtrooper stumbled, backing off, falling over a log, and then freezing, hands raised. He did all he could think of to do.
No. Please.
He begged. Aphra shook her head. They train you to shoot. They train you to follow orders. They train you in, well, other things. Marching, I guess. But they don't train you how to beg for your life, she said.
Take your helmet off.
Aphra was expecting to have to repeat herself, but he pulled the helmet off instantly. They did have the following orders thing nailed down. He was about a decade younger than Aphra, not out of his teens yet. Nose too big, eyes blue and scared. She sighed.
See, now you're a human. If you're begging for your life, you want people to know you're a living, breathing thing and not some weird enamel droid.
It's easy to kill stormtroopers. Because all that stuff about triggers I just told you, she said, I don't think any of it's true. I think that the Death Star has a trigger. Because I think it's easy to kill a planet. It's all so abstract. It's why guys like Tag are fine with sending armies to their death, while they order their troopers to take me out of sight to put a blast through my chest. A planet doesn't have a face, she said. It'd take a real monster to pull the trigger if Alderaan had a face. His eyes moved between Aphra and the black of the gun barrel. Aphra had always defended the Empire as the best available choice, better than anarchy. Today the Empire had destroyed a planet, worse than a war's cost in an afternoon. She had no idea what to do with these feelings. Maybe when they had chilled, she could justify it. What's one planet if it cements a real peace? That sounds like the sort of logic she'd turn to. The needs justify the ends and all that. But right now, she just wished there could be a better Empire, and wished there was someone who could do that. The boy was crying. Aphra felt shame and anger mix inside her. Her excitement was real. Her anger was real. It was all real. But it was clouded by the shame. Shame that she was right. She could have shot a stormtrooper. She wasn't going to shoot this boy with a wet face and terrified eyes.
Okay, she said, starting to back away. This is the deal. Put your helmet back on. Tell them you shot me. If they ask, tell them I begged, but they won't ask. Another death today isn't exactly going to rate, right?
She shot the blaster at the ground. He jumped back.
That's your people thinking you've done your job, she said. Alderaan's dead, and Scavenger and Stormtrooper both live. Sound good?
He nodded. She winked, and then she turned and ran, dropping the blaster where he could find it. Within 100 meters, she heard shouts. Within 200, she heard the scream of the alarm. Within 5 minutes, she was punching the Archangel into orbit, TIE fighters on her aft, engines screaming, seeing the white dagger of a Star Destroyer loom into view ahead of her. As she fumbled with the navigation computer, looking for a route to the safe blue of hyperspace, she cursed herself for another moment of weakness in a universe that has none. One day,
she'd learn.
Of MSC 6 and Men,
by Glenn Weldon. 0801.
Exit sleep mode.
08013.
Sync with the S10BS network.
0802.
Run self-diagnostic. Designation.
MSE 6 G735Y.
Function.
Delivery/repair.
Assigned to.
Maintenance unit. Sector AA345. DS-1, Orbital Battle Station.
Systems check. Modular circuit matrix processor.
Optimal.
Proximity sensors.
Optimal.
Internal bay sensors.
Optimal.
Dorsal doors.
Optimal.
Holorecorder.
Optimal.
Dynadroid 9 ES motors.
Optimal.
Wheels.
Left front tread depth suboptimal. Will require replacement in 30 cycles. 08412.
Standby mode entered.
08-15-37.
Proximity sensors. Bioform detected.
08-15-38.
Identify bioform. Designation TK-421. Security level lambda.
Morning, G7.
08-15-40.
Bioform voice command. Morning, G7. Logged. Response required. Affirmative.
Open up for me.
08-15-45.
Bioform voice command. Open up for me. Logged. Response required. Disengage lock. Open dorsal doors.
Great. Get this scanner servo to TK-450 at docking bay 228. You know the drill.
08-15-55.
Bioform voice command. Get this scanner servo to TK-450 at docking bay 228. Logged. Response required. Cargo delivery slash receipt, subroutine.
08-16-23.
Cargo received from Bioform TK-421.
08-16-33.
Close dorsal doors, engage lock.
08-16-36.
Engage internal bay sensors.
08-16-45.
Onboard cargo identified. Servo Imperial Scanner, 97DX8.
08-16-52.
Auto-nav route. Engage motors. Arrive destination. DB-228.
08-45-4.
Proximity sensors. Recipient detected.
08-45-10.
Identify recipient. Designation TK-450. Security level, row.
08-45-33.
Alert recipient of presence.
Oh, didn't see you down there, buddy. 08-45-48.
Disengage lock. Open dorsal doors.
There it is. Finally, been waiting 6 cycles for this. 08-45-55.
Engage holorecorder for receipt acknowledgments.
Right. TK-450 acknowledging receipt of cargo. There you go. Anyway, took you guys down there long enough. We're backed up. I've got 12 ships waiting on scanner crews. General Tag was up here yesterday. That vein in his forehead pounding away. You guys have really got to start. 08-46-39.
Disengage on a recorder.
Wow, okay. You know, I hadn't finished. Now, you know what? Fine. That's just typical. I can tell TK-421 programmed you. You're just like him. Ignore the stuff you don't want to hear. Fine, little guy. Whatever. 08-46-46.
Close dorsal doors. Engage lock.
You know what? 421 wouldn't last a minute up here. I tell you that much. And he knows it. Never had the deal with people, just spends every cycle down there talking to the droids who got barely 2 synaptic processes to rub together. He's never had officers like Tag breathing down his neck. Or Tarkin. Or Tarkin's pet. The iron lung in a cape. I'd like to see 421 try to look that guy in the transparent steel holoplates. He'd faint dead away. 08-46-59.
Input irrelevant to delivery/receipt subroutine mission parameters.
08-47.